Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Actually, the website's down at the moment, for whatever dopey reason. Dreamhost now. So I finally got rid of GoDaddy, finally, almost got everything out of there. And after 20 years of aggravation, and now Dreamhost is acting funky. But whatever. I mean, they don't have a simple thing like where you could just click a button and say, hey, my website's down, fix it. I know it's not broken and something. I didn't do anything, right? I haven't touched it today. It's obviously your fault, so fix it. No, they don't have any such button. Anyway, everything is just so shitty. So anyway, this is the Benatar and Monte Hardy. Conversation about euthanasia, really. It should be about, you know, the Better Never to Have Been title of Benatar's book and how seriously he takes that, in the sense of, I don't really see the point in saying you wouldn't realistically be better off if you gave up right now and didn't wake up tomorrow, because you're just looking forward to some kind of who knows what kind of crap is going to happen. You know, you're in some accident, you can't get out of it, an earthquake, whatever, some other kind of terrible thing happens, and you're just exposing yourself to a huge risk that, you know, you're going to be choking on your own blood or something, you know, in 15 minutes, and it's going to be very bad. And, you know, you could have skipped all of that shit if you just didn't wake up yesterday or the day before. And yes, it's all fine to talk about our little personal narratives, and we have a little perception that we're accomplishing something, going somewhere and getting somewhere. But we also can know, you know, we can use our brain and figure out that that's all kind of delusional shit. And, you know, I got little plants growing, and I think it somehow matters. You know, it's, oh, yeah, I'm going to have tomatoes, and I'm going to have, who knows if we're going to have any of that shit. And if I do, it's not going to be, it's a 10 cent pleasure, you know, it's very cheap, but it's very just wacky shit that, oh yeah, somehow I did it and I feel accomplished because I made a plant grow, you know, some kind of crap like that. So anyway, so all of our life adventuring is all just projection of accomplishment, and the definition of it is always silly, like I'm going to hold up the Oscar, I'm going to hold up the gold medal, I'm going to conquest and, you know, rub her hiney, and yeah, you might, you know, but day after is still going to be the day after. The grind continues, and your exposure to your eventual destruction is there. And so it is a serious kind of subject, just to point out that, you know, living is risky. And yes, there's a point in doing it when you're somebody like a vegan or some other person who wants to rescue the, you know, inmates from their prison. And I would take it, you know, from the effortless perspective, you're trying to prevent all of the future births that would take place and cause all kinds of risk to be exposed and created and happen, you know, just as law of probabilities and odds, all of that choking on their blood thing is going to happen. And it'd be best if it didn't. So it really is just humans, you know, anthropomorphizing humanity. They're just pretending they're special. They don't see themselves as biological robots, just programmed machines in a circumstance. Yes, biological, made of flesh and blood. And, we have this dominant feature where we can manifest a sensation. We can have a feeling. And then most of our thoughts are about fixing our feelings, you know, making our feelings better, trying to feel better, more complete, more satisfied, more comfortable, less indigestion, less, I'm constantly, you know, I'm constantly trying to digest existence, and it doesn't work very well. And especially getting older, it just doesn't, you know, no good at all. No fun to be had, realistically. You're just clinging to whatever functionality you had and just, you know, holding tight and hoping, you know, that you'll stay functional enough to do what you think you need to get done. And like I said, some of this thinking is worth doing. You know, think about what the thing is and how to fix it and how what's the straightest line and the most efficient course of action. And all of that's part of this conversation. And so, all right, so we'll get to where we are. Benatar is basically saying that, yes, it's wrong to create animals for food. But then he's conceding it's also wrong to create them for any other purpose either. And then he's going to make some excuse that it's okay, you know, if you're taking care of animals that would be put to sleep. Like somehow if they were put to sleep, he thinks that's bad. So he actually thinks being dead is a lesser state of being. Is there any other conclusion you can draw? I can't draw any other conclusion. I mean, we die every night. You know, I mean, you go to bed, you go to sleep, you're most of that time you're dead. Yes, sometimes, some part of the time you're having some deluded, crazy, fucktarded, nonsense constructed maze game to play out, you know, some real fakey matrix version of your life where everything is broken and fucked up, you know, decapitated heads or having conversations, all kinds of wacky shit. Well, you want to count that as being alive. I don't know. It's kind of a silly version. Now and then, you know, once in a while my brain has pleased me considerably in my dream life. But it is rare that they're really fun dreams, for me anyway. They're mostly just harassing, problem-solving dreams, probably related to the fact that my life is always trying to fix something that's broken, have a conversation with morons and try to convince them that they're morons and blah, blah, blah. So it's always a task and a chore. And so my dreams are just tasks and chores. Which really sucks. Because back in the day, when I wasn't as completely immersed in this role I'm playing of fixing, I did have more fun in my dreams. Especially as a kid, I used to fly, you know, do all kinds of things. Very nice. But anyway, those were the days. Lament, lament. Bah, 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 bah. Okay. So let's play some of this crap. So, I mean, Benatar's just gotten wishy-washy and mushy and useless, and it's just pretty sad, you know, frankly. His book was pretty clear in making the statement that, yeah, if you think this is some great adventure, you're just a deluded kook, and it's really just carnage for nothing.
But it's sort of overdetermined here, because it would be wrong to create them in the first place on the ordinary antinatalist grounds. And then,
right, so, you know, it doesn't matter that you're killing them and torturing them and having them for food. That's bad, double bad, but, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's double bad. I don't know if that counts. You know, double completely wrong.
When you couple that with the quality of life, the tremendously poor quality of life that they have, the harm just gets increased.
So, and then this quality of life thing, again, is another conversation to have, because at least some of these farm animals aren't getting their nuts cut off. I mean, some do. A lot of them get their nuts cut off, but I mean, some of them aren't getting their nuts cut off. But there's not as many males necessary, so it's really a lot of women being in the concentration camp, you know, the chickens and very few roosters involved, I suspect. And, you know, a lot of the other farm animals the same way, cows, milk, you know, calves, that's the important part. The males are blah, blah. But anyway, but this whole idea that, you know, the average pet's life is some wonderful, spectacular thing, when in fact you know, people do treat them like they, you know, and they cling to them and, you know, they don't give them the best death and they don't give them like I said, they start off pretty bad, having their, you know, big piece of their passion quotient cut the fuck off. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't take the deal. I mean, life is really ridiculous, right? But I mean, I can, you know, cut my nuts off. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to describe that. Okay, yes, I wouldn't choose to live again, but I would really not choose to live again if I, you know, don't want to say I wouldn't want to be a woman, but I'm just saying I, you know, and I certainly wouldn't want to be a castrated male. I mean, fuck that. Even if I'm nice and cozy and comfortable and I sit in a chair and go, ooh, how comfortable, and I eat my little sushi or something, blah, 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 and I'm, fuck that. You know, I just can't even, I can't even imagine the point of existence then. So I can imagine some little point, some reason to live, you know, when you have a usable penis. Even if you're not being able to use it, I mean, you know, in its intended manner, it's just nice to have one. And I just can't imagine walking this trail of tears without one. Oh. Well, anyway.
Significantly. I think similarly about creating companion animals, but there's often a complexity in companion animals because at least some people are adopting companion animals that already exist.
Yeah, they all say that. Everybody says it, right? The guy, like a purebred Pomeranian. Oh, he's a rescue Pomeranian. Yeah, sure.
And when they do that, let's say from a pound in the case of dogs, an animal shelter, what they're actually doing is not creating a being, and they've had no part in creating the being, but they are playing a part in preventing the early death of that.
Right, and that's, I'm really not making a huge argument against pets, okay? I mean, I know it's important to a lot of people, and it's not something I'm really making an argument and saying this is the most horrific thing happening on Earth. It's not the most horrific. But it's just a fact. They don't need to be alive. So it's just ridiculous to make the argument somehow their death is some sort of tragedy for them. It really isn't. They are really, you know, we're robots, but they're really robotic, okay? I mean, they're really just, you know, a crude psychological profile. You know, imposed on a, you know, a thing with teeth and, you know, I mean, you know, it's a... And, you know, you're just rubbing its belly and hoping it doesn't eat your face. So let's not... But let's not pretend they have any story to complete. They don't. You know, there's no painting they haven't painted, okay? There just isn't.
That be. And because I take death to be bad...
So again, why would somebody say that? I mean, why would a rational person say there's something wrong with being dead? I mean, you can't make that argument rationally. It's just, you can't. I mean, if I don't wake up tomorrow, it's bad for somebody else, right? Because they got to clean up my mess, and their life might be all fucked up and thrown into a whirlpool of shit. Because, you know, interdependencies and all that kind of stuff. But just if we isolated just me in this, you know, this was, if I was living my old life and it was just me and that's all that mattered, I could be dead a month and no one would notice. And being dead wouldn't mean anything for me. It's not going to, I'm not in a lesser state. And so he's almost arguing that it's better to be, so you can appreciate how awful it is to be dead. You know, is that what he's saying? Oh, look at old Santino. I miss him.
For animals as well, I think they're actually doing something good for the animal. Now, I'm a little worried.
So again, why would you say that? Why would he say it's good for the animal to live to die badly when you can make it die really quick and not badly? I don't see any logic in it, sorry.
That your summary earlier suggests that I've already agreed that killing Marzipan is okay, and I've not...
Yeah, that's the funny part, right? When, yeah, so now he's going to basically say what I said in the first part of this video, which is, that's not what he said, Marty. He basically said, no, you can't kill Marzipan. You know, somehow, you know, somebody brought up the other day, I was talking to somebody, and they brought up that silly movie with the Tom Hanks, they're all silly movies, right? With the robot thing for the, you know, he builds a robot to take, he's dying, you know, and, you know, it's all okay, though. He's not dying in any horrible way, right? And he has time to build a robot so the robot can walk the dog. I mean, it was just so fucking ridiculous. But I guess Benatar would do that. Because the dog has so many more dog butts to smell. Oh, there's no other dogs on Earth. Oh, okay, so it doesn't even get to smell dog butt. Oh, and you need to keep it alive. I mean, it can't do one of its favorite things. Shit.
I've not done that. I think if Marzipan was suffering unspeakably now, then you...
Well, then it's obvious. Yes, then it's not even an issue, is it? Well, we don't even know what unspeakably is. So now his standard is you have to be unspeakably... in distress. So maybe a little bit of distress, say, oh, it's okay, I'm not going to help you out. You know, so I guess he really wouldn't. He's not like pro-suicide. You know, he really thinks you have to jump a hoop. You have to meet Benatarian standards before you can jump. You know, you don't need just a statement saying, I don't really feel any need to continue to exist. That's not enough. You don't need to just say that. Somehow you have to have some whole other check boxes all filled in besides just saying, well, if I don't need it, then I guess I couldn't need it if I don't need it. If I can't find the need for it, then I guess the need can't exist, right? But Benatar can see the special need. You do need to live. Even though you say you don't, you do. I mean, really, this is... Everybody disappoints. It's just a fact of my life. There's a couple I'm clinging to still, people. I'm just clinging to them, just saying, oh, yeah, don't blow up. Please, please don't blow up. But, you know.
Facing her would be the right thing to do. But the fact that she's going to lead a normal life.
Yes. What do I do today? Are there any pink balloons for me to hump? Is there something for me to do? What do I do today? Hey, there's nobody here to feed me. What is he imagining? What is the... There's nothing. It lives in the Desalonia. There's nothing. It's got a whole adventure it's going to have. Being terrorized. Oh, it's just so goddamn stupid. I can't believe this is Benatar talking this. This is just girly mush.
For a significant period and then succumb to suffering makes this harder. Because the justification for euthanasia is not merely on the basis that...
Yes, no, the justification is merely to, you're going to die anyway, and you might as well do it well instead of really badly. You have two choices, do it well or do it really, really, really badly. Okay, let's do it well thing. Oh, fuck. Let's do it while I feel good. Yeah, that's a great time to die, is when you feel good. Not when you're desperately in need.
At some point in the future, somebody's going to suffer unbearably. Because then we could just go around euthanizing piles of children now.
Right, yes, we could. And the actual fact is it wouldn't be the Hindenburg disaster. It wouldn't be 110 dead people. I think it was 110, something like that. It wouldn't be that much of a catastrophe. So you could... Because it's, you're just pretending to think that dead is the problem when living and dying is the problem. Consciousness is the problem. And the escape is to just gracefully become unconscious and never arise out of that vegetable state.
because in 80 years' time, they might suffer the horrors of cancer, let's say.
Yes, that's all going to happen. That's exactly the fucking irony of it, isn't it? So again, I've mentioned the plane crash victims before, and everybody's just, oh, how horrible. They got off easy. You know, I mean, it's just a fact. They got off easy. And this process, it doesn't matter whether we live 40 years and die and 80 years and die and all that kind of crap, because we're never going to be ready. If you're an active brain working in the world, you're never going to say, I'm done now. Because there's the same stuff you were doing when you were 20, you're going to be doing when you're 40 and when you're 60 and when you're 70. You know, you're still going to be wanting to do these things. Yes, you might be crippled with arthritis and you can't do it anymore. And then you have an incentive, because then you can't do anything anymore. But if you're functional, you still want to do. It's the machine. The machine's a do machine. It wants to do stuff.
And die. And I'm not committed to that.
So it's just idiotic. He's not committed to recognizing that, yes, it's better never to have been or ever to have been or ever to be, because you're always just opening the door to the horrific negative that can never be compensated for with any positive. I mean, just imagine all the grief. You know, you could just go by the grief. All those people get killed in a plane crash. They don't have to watch their parents die, or they don't have to watch their kid get cancer. They don't have to, you know, all the stuff they're missing out on. Yeah. Lucky fuckers.
And in ordinary cases, we don't need to be committed to that, because you just put up with life for now until it gets to the point where it is no longer bearable. And in many cases...
So why should it have to go all the way to never even, never bearable? Shouldn't it just go to, I've had my fill. Yeah, I'm full. I don't need any more of this shit. You know, I get it. I'm just set up to watch horror. I don't want to watch any more horror films. I've seen enough. This is a terrible game we're playing. I mean, I either have to watch my sisters die or they have to watch me die. Fuck that. Who wants to play this stupid game? I don't ever want to play it again. Please don't manufacture me and put me on the goddamn board. I have a right to say that clearly. I have a right to stop people who think they have a right to mold me and place me on that board.
You will then be dealing with a competent being who's able to make that judgment for themselves.
Oh, shit. So all this talk. So, yeah, if you had a retarded kid dependent on you, what are you going to do? You're going to die and leave the kid to what? Eat your corpse? What? Smell your anus? What's it going to do?
Even in the case of companion animals, though, you don't euthanize your puppy on the day you get your puppy.
Ah, but it would be that if you want to do the right thing, you're saving it a lot of grief. So, yeah. Let it go to sleep and not wake up. Never wake up, berries. This is something we've got to work on. Somebody's got to invent them. You know, because save an awful lot of grief.
You try to give your puppy the best life possible. And then if you need to make the decision down the line to terminate the dog's life.
So this just doesn't have anything to do with the title of his book or a rational interpretation of, recognizing the negative quality of life, that it is just shoving something into quicksand and then watching it struggle to keep enough of its, you know, face above the suffocating crud and just spend an existence struggling. And if anybody's seen little animals, like, you know, puppies and kittens, you know, they struggle. Now, you know, they get to a medium size and it's all fun for a little while, and then it gets serious again, you know, because their nuts drop and, you know, they get completely distracted and, there's no going back to the fun days. And you see it with all kinds of animals. Little baby lambs will be hopping all over the place. What are sheep doing all day? Grass, choo-choo, grass, choo-choo. No fun, no hopping, none of that shit.
Because that's in its overall interest to do so. What's difficult about the marzipan case is that you've got this one last window in which you can form the so-called euthanasia.
Throw the poor little guinea pig out the window. That's his answer.
In order to prevent the suffering down the line. And that is a very difficult case.
So again, I can't, all of this is just so, it's humiliating the subject to talk about, how complicated one fucking guinea pig is in light of the mass murder taking place every millisecond on this planet of sentient lives, just as real as little marzipan. And you'll endure the trillions or the billions, but you're gonna, I'm gonna have to struggle to make a decision for this one. Oh, fuck.
If you ask my intuitions on this, I'm likely to say that you wouldn't be justified in killing marzipan unless that suffering were.
It's inevitable. It's going to die, and there's no one to mitigate. There's no one to hold its little paw or anything. So fuck you, you sadistic fuck.
Fairly imminent.
And if the suffering were fairly imminent, then you would justify it.
I think you could make a case for it, yes.
So fairly imminent. It's got a 3-year life anyway. Oh, well, if it's going to die in, 16 and a half days, then it's okay. But if it's 17 days, no. Oh, God. That's just so ridiculous.
It's often difficult, even if you think about human cases, because what's happening now with the legalization of assisted dying for humans.
Oh, no. He's going to say something against it? Oh, fuck. It's a bunch of people who have lost interest in living or dying. That's not a good enough reason you've lost interest. Yeah, is he going to say something stupid? This is so disappointing.
Is there some jurisdictions where people have not reached the point at which they would actually like to die, but they realize that if they continue much longer, they'll no longer be afforded the opportunity to gain assistance? So these are jurisdictions, for example, where if you have mental degeneration, but you pass the point where you're no longer competent to make decisions, then you can no longer get the assistance.
So he's talking about some special case that I imagine doesn't happen very often, because I don't see why they would prohibit it if you've asked for it ahead of time. So, obviously this is all should be a living will thing, and we all should say fuck you to the religious assholes and stay the fuck out of my goddamn business. All right, and we could sign this piece of paper when we're 10, and then we'd sign it when we're 15, and we sign it when we're 25. And then if you sign it saying the opposite at any point, then you have a 10-year prohibition against changing your mind. So you could put protections in so easily, and they don't bother. But it really, a rational person's got to recognize that, well, if the person doesn't need to live, why would I make them need to live? That would be really just stupid. I mean, if they don't need it, why would I be shoving food down their throat?
And so what people are forced into is a choice whereby they seek to have their lives ended before they've reached the point that they would ideally like to die. Because if they don't make the decision now, they'll be deprived of that decision later.
So I don't know whether he has any real statistics to back this one up, that there's any place on Earth where that actually does happen, where somebody with a mental degenerative disease, has to die when they tell them to. So say they go. They say, look, I'm going Alzheimer's-y. I'd like the right to die. And then the organization says, well, you have to do it tomorrow. And I say, well, I'd like to wait like 2 or 3 weeks if that's okay. But, I'm getting progressively worse. 3 weeks from now is probably the right time. I just want to get this done ahead of time. We gotta just arrange it. And they're not going to, they're going to force the person to die today and they can't wait 3 weeks? Bullshit! So he's just making this story up.
So that's the sort of closest analogy I would get in the human case. And those are real dilemmas.
It says you they're real. Okay, I don't think there is any such case in recorded, documented history somewhere where somebody died before they wanted to because the institution insisted they do it today.
And I think they even present dilemmas for the doctors who are assisting in these cases, because they know that the person actually...
BS. This is just BS. The doctor's going to say, you have to do it today. You can't wait 3 weeks. I'm sure the doctor will say, yeah, 3 weeks is fine. See you then. But what the fuck is he talking about?
Doesn't want to die now. And the only reason why they're authorizing it now is in order to prevent...
Oh, this is such straw man nonsense. Just such a... This is just such a weak counter argument that there's, oh, this is way too complicated for us humans. Oh, we can't possibly understand this whole concept. Oh, fuck you. I mean, this Benatar has become a jerk. I take a break. Jeez, it's all very, very disappointing. All right, so I was just thinking about this circumstance. So let's say you got some degenerative mental capacity, and the problem is that you're worried that in 3 weeks you'll start saying you want to live, right? And but yeah, that wouldn't be understood as a medical condition. So I mean, this wouldn't be unknown to the medical people. Okay, that the person, as they go more and more delusional or lose more and more of their current identity and intelligence, that they're going to revert into, you know, a child. And obviously, they're not going to let the child make the decision. So I guess, you know, you're arguing that, why don't you just videotape the person having the conversation saying, yeah, it's time to go. Here's, I'm signing the contract. And then you can just show that to the future person who doesn't remember anything. And just say, look, see, you know, you are now insane. See, the person back then is calling you kooky and it's disqualified your judgment. And so it was a contract. You signed it. Done deal. So you're going whether you want to or not, you know, because you're crazy. I mean, it's not complicated. It's not that complicated. All right.
Then... having to linger on at a later point when they will no longer be afforded the opportunity.
And fair enough.
So they're not afforded the opportunity when they're worse in a worse condition. So I'm just saying that I don't think there's too many places that are going to do that. That are going to say, when you're worse, we won't let you.
You would probably say that killing Marzipan would be wrong, even for those merciful reasons. And yet you are saying that sometimes infanticide might be right, and I'm assuming that it doesn't have to be. I mean, the infant doesn't, or in your book, does the infant have to suffer now to justify the preemptive euthanasia?
So that's the whole issue, right? Is that what? When are you going to apply your judgment? And when are you going to say, well, a five-year-old can't make these choices? Yeah. And so they just drag them. They force them to go to chemo. They force them to do all this stuff because they don't respect any kind of sense of an autonomy. But worse, they don't apply their own best judgment. They apply some hopeful judgment. I want it to go away. I want the kid's cancer to go away. They don't want to have to really deal with the fact that there's no point in torturing the fucking thing to death. Just allow it to die. As gracefully as possible. I mean, it's just so insidious.
Or is it sufficient that we know that the suffering will start in a week or two?
Well, I think if the suffering is now, it's not preemptive. It's that would be a standard case of euthanasia. I think the complexity...
Standard case. There's no... You know, so again, standard case by whose convention? I'm just saying that the euthanasia just has to do with it's a rational argument about the best interest. And you either believe, you know, you have a belief, and you're either saying my beliefs are consistent with other people's beliefs, or no, other people are all fucking sadistic lunatics. but I don't know how you can logically be more than just one thing. You can logically understand it and say, yes, it would be a waste of suffering because there's nothing to be gained in those 2 weeks.
In all of these cases is that there are gradations of considerations. So if you think about suffering, suffering doesn't come in one degree of intensity. There can be gradations. There can also be gradations in terms of how far in the future. Is it now? Is it in a minute's time, an hour's time, a day?
Oh, yeah, or is it a risk? So why open? I'm just saying, you're playing roulette and saying you're going to win at the roulette table. The death of something could be of unknown. It's of unknown horror. And you have to assume both possibilities and say, well, what's the right choice in terms of these extremes where, well, they could just drop dead of a heart attack, not a problem. I don't need to do anything. but you know that realistically, that's 1% of the cases, and I have to account for the other 99 cases. And my argument is that the worst cases, the worst 20% of cases are so bad that you don't even open the door to their possibility.
A day's time, a week's time, a year's time, 10 years' time. So there are gradations here. And I don't think it's possible to give a formula to say precisely when it's going to be justified and when it's not.
I would argue that I have a formula. No, you have one. Everybody has a formula of some kind. You have some vague notion of what's worth it. And you have some notion of what extreme event would make nothing worth it. And as long as that is a realistic outcome, you really don't have a choice. There's too many skull and crossbones on the dice to throw them. That's the point. That's the never better never to have been part.
So what I'm most comfortable doing is pointing out what I take the considerations to be. How we come down in a particular case depends on, as I've said, an array of things, including how bad do you take death to be for a being of a particular kind, and then how much suffering, and when will that suffering occur? Those are the kinds of considerations.
Right. So we've already done that, all of us viewers. We've all done that already. So, yeah, obviously death is nothing, so that's meaningless. That's not a harm, being dead. Okay, the dying thing is the only thing at issue, and the competition is between the possibility of dying absolutely horribly, hours or days and months of horrible suffering, and the opposed to whatever it is you would accomplish in the time, the extra time you spent playing life, being alive and doing this bullshit, dreaming an existence, essentially. I mean, our alive state isn't much better than a dream state, frankly, in terms of it's just full of bullshit. Bullshit ambitions, bullshit adventures, bullshit curiosity, bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. We have to look in the box because the box is there and it just draws our attention and we just robotically say, I must know what's in the box. I mean, that's all we're doing. We're just peeking through life. Peek, peek, peek.
And people can have different answers on those different points, and those are all going to impact, or could all impact, on the ultimate decision that you take. In the marzipan case, what's particularly worrying for me is that this is, as you've described the case, so far in the future that she's going to suffer in this way.
So he's got to know enough about biological science that marzipan is not going to have a long future. I mean, it's not going to be 40 years. It's not going to be 30. It's not going to be 20. It's going to be more like 5 at best. And it's already been, it's already his friend. So he's already had him a while. And again, so what is a marzipan going to do that needs to get done? What adventure is it going to have? When you think about just as a pile of adventuring for a guinea pig. So let's say there's been a trillion guinea pigs on Earth throughout history. We know the number is like 50, a trillion, trillion. what's 5 more minutes of that bullshit? It's like saying, here's a rat doing rat. Now, you know how many rats have done rat already? I mean, that record has been played so many times. You think it needs to be played this one more time? This one more version of rat ratting is really important. Oh, fuck you. It's just ridiculous. You know, it's like having one pixel on the screen out. What are you? Oh, panic. No panic.
That I don't know what level of confidence you can have that this is in fact the likely outcome. And once
the likely outcome is death, and there's just no rational way. If there's no entertaining world, what do you think he's going to buy an automatic feeder and a cage cleaner and he's going to prepay the electric bill? What the fuck are you talking about?
Two confidence levels get reduced, then I think you need to err on the side of not harming, even if you're going to...
Not harming. I mean, again, it doesn't make any sense in the context of the inevitable harm and certainly the risk of harm. So, I mean, the inevitable, actual, real, hard, factual risk. And doing nothing in the face of that risk is just saying you can't apply intelligence. Because that's your job. That's the whole function of thinking, is to find a solution. And the solution of do nothing is, that's a moron's answer.
To be thereby possibly allowing harm.
I can see in operation the one point, one philosophical point on which we differ, and that is that death is a bad, and we don't have to go in there. I mean, if death is a bad for you and in your book, then it is. One other consideration that...
Well, I don't know. I think that's a pretty important subject, so I think you ought to clear that one up. You ought to just say, well, what research have you done to figure this death is bad thing out? Where did you find that out? Where did you... what logic drove you to this conclusion that, being dead is somehow a negative condition?
That we could take into account or should take into account here when I'm permitting marzipan's euthanasia and you then probably aren't. Still, one consideration in the case of sentient humans and non-humans in our care.
So I don't know why they bother with this conversation, because it seems like he has an agenda that he thought of ahead of time, and he's just doing his ahead of time agenda. He's just forgetting about the fact that Benatar basically just said death is a harm somehow, and that isn't a much bigger subject.
Well, they are clear. I mean, it is clear to me that I can, should perhaps do that decision for Marzipan, because she is in my care. And I should not breed a guinea pig or even let them breed or any animals that are in our care. That's why I don't like factory farming or think that it's bad. And I think that even perhaps sterilization, chemical or surgical, might be an option for an antinatalist activist now preventing the coming to existence of sentient lives. Well, now this turns into two
questions. So again, that's a whole other subject about trying to do that in any kind of passive way. And then again, if it's really just, again, it's... I just can't understand living the life of... Mrs. Apron. Some thing that's just a drone and just it does these little chores and that's good enough. housewife. Fuck that. Oh God, it's like compared to like losing your arm in a war. I don't know which one would be worse if I had to pick one. Yeah. It just depends on. You can lose your arm in the war, but you still have a 12-inch penis. So yeah, then it's a really easy choice.
Questions, and the first is, would you object strongly to sterilizing pet animals? And then there's the extinction, and the second question, what about sentient non-humans, marsupials, cousins in the wild? They suffer too. And if a conscientious antinatalist is comfortable with the idea of sterilizations, wouldn't they have to extend that to the wild too, or more generally, how, if at all, should we...
So all this is blah, 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 blah. So, you know, again, if there's some way to just break all the eggs, you know, in some passive way, some virus just breaks eggs, no matter where they are, super, great, fantastic. Okay, excellent. But you still have to recognize that it's going to be a bit of a holocaust, right? For, you know, all these animals that exist are going to have to die off, and they're going to have to die off, like the predators are going to run out of prey, so they're going to starve to death. So there's going to be some negative repercussions, in the sense that there'll be a bunch of exchanges in terms of the quality of who dies worse and who dies better. But the point is they're all going to die anyway. So why are we having a conversation about this end times when it's always end times? It's always, everything is squished out of existence, okay? So the whole real argument is about when, and the more important argument is before they lay eggs or after they lay eggs, in a way. You know, and the real part that has to be stopped is the egg-laying part. So that's all you're really doing, right? You're just saying, look, instead of letting the last generation lay a bunch of eggs and create a new generation, we will shorten their existence to before they lay an egg. You know, but that's all it is. You can't really make an argument that there's more harm involved, because there isn't.
As antinatalists of your kind react to non-human reproduction and misery?
One answer to the question, I think, is clear for me, that we shouldn't be actively going out and breeding, whether it be companion animals or animals for human consumption. Now, if we're speaking about animals in the wild, or we're speaking about sterilizing animals, these raise other questions. And I'm going to, unfortunately, not satisfy you by just not answering that question now. I'm working on a new book at the moment, and I deal with these questions there. I'd like to work them out more fully in my mind and test them before I present them in a forum like this.
Well, the real point is that this is something that has to be done after you've substantially reduced human population, because if you start messing with the biosphere, it's going to blow back, okay, and cause a bunch of problems for humans as well. So, you know, there's no way, you know, you can in any substantial way interfere with the circle of life, okay? Because we're part of it. So until we're separate, you know, sort of living in our synthetic environments and, you know, in a tiny reduced number and just making decisions on how to clean the mess up, that's when you have a conversation about sterilizing nature.
So I would just like to delay answering that question, if you like.
I'm sure we're all looking forward to seeing what your thoughts on this in your recent and forthcoming books will be. So good to know that things are brewing there. Coming back to marsupial, some commentators have pointed out that her case doesn't fall under the notion of antinatalism as and this is your definition, the view that it is morally wrong to bring sentient beings into existence. And this is, of course, correct. The case.
Okay, so again, all this morally wrong stuff, it's just the word is wrong, okay? It's wrong to. You know, that's it. It's bad, okay? It's bad behavior. Causes unnecessary harms.
As such is something...
First, do no bad stuff. Yeah, evade doing bad things.
Else, but it only needs a little tweak. Remember, applied philosopher, applied atheist, always talking about something else. It only needs a little tweak to change the situation. Now consider this. In addition to all the other details, Marzipan is pregnant. Before her own demise, she would have the time to produce a litter. And this litter might...
Right. Well, now you squish it. You step on it if you have to. Oh, yeah, no. Now you have a, you know, frankly, now you have, it's like marzipan. It's the same thing, right? As long as you understand life to be a negative, it's to be the same thing as marzipan having rabies. And so now you really have a reason, okay, to make sure it ain't going to happen, Marzi. Yeah, sorry.
Might or might not then go on to repopulate the earth with guinea pigs. Now, by killing Marzipan, I would not only spare her from her impending suffering, but also, knowingly or not, prevent many sentient beings from coming into existence, which is sort of a good thing. So in our panel, and I think...
So if there was a mad scientist and he was friends with the president, and he was building himself a rocket ship to go to Mars, and he was going to populate Mars, okay, with life, do I have a right to shoot his goddamn spaceship down? And I'd say I do. I have a right. You know, but it's not a wrong. It's wrong what he's doing.
This can also be traced back to better never to have been, at least in spirit. One of your definitions was that antinatalist adjective is of or relating to a person, policy, practice, law, attitude, etc., that discourages or reduces.
Or prevents, or criminalizes. And yes, all of those things could be part of the future democracy if we can get the religious kooks to quit diluting our civilization into garbage.
I'm emphasizing, reduces the reproduction of sentient beings. And now killing Marzipan, according to this, is plainly an antinatalist act, killing the pregnant Marzipan, because it reduces the reproduction of sentient beings. So if the question was... And my-
well, he's not going to go for it. He's going to say that somehow there's a moral imperative, okay, whatever that was, what does Star Trek call it? A prime directive. First, do nothing to... fix anything that requires you to actually break an egg. You can't make no omelets because they break eggs. You can't do that.
It was, does antinatalism as introduced in Better Never to Have Been ever involve killing, deliberately and intentionally taking lives? The answer seems to be yes, it does. So it seems to me.
I don't see that in the book. So, you know, I don't think he faced any of those ethical questions about even the future and how it would migrate into a better perspective. He just didn't touch any of that. He just talked about, sort of like Schopenhauer, life is suffering, okay. You're not going to win, okay. So quit pretending it's a joyride, because it isn't, okay.
But you will have to be the judge of this. So the question, in your view, is this modest conclusion that antinatalism sometimes justifiably kills or justifies killing valid? Or have I somehow horribly misunderstood and misinterpreted your case?
Thanks. I think you have misrepresented me. I think the definition of antinatalism I'll stand by, but it doesn't follow, even as I say in Better Never to Have Been, that any means to an antinatalist end would be just...
It wasn't any means, so let's understand, it's one specific circumstance. So you're going to do this unpleasant thing that has a very pleasant outcome, by the way. I mean, Marzipan wins and... the future wins, so it's a win-win in that sense. Marzipan spared a bad death and given a graceful death, and you're spared this blight of infection. You know, future Marzipans to have to endure the better to have been avoided catastrophe. And so there's no way to evade the logic of it. Yeah, there's no... You do the right thing. This is as obvious as, you know, there's some creature with four broken legs on the side of the road, you know, all kinds of internal injuries. And do you hasten its demise? And of course you do.
Justified. That's going to depend in part on what other views you have. So if you think the ends always justify the means, then maybe you would think that going around killing pregnant women is justifiable.
So again, this isn't about pregnant women, okay? It's about a hamster, okay? So let's understand. And we manipulate animals all the time, and you have to. And so again, it would be as silly as saying you don't need to cull mountain lions or something, and they can go ahead and walk the streets of L.A. I mean, it's too retarded.
Because of the number of births you will prevent. But that's not a view I hold. Because I take killing to be presumptively wrong, unless there's an excellent justification in rooted in the interests of the being.
So again, it's just this is a social necessity, thou shalt not. This is social contract talk. So we know that, you know, if I'm going to have a rational conversation about something, I can make the argument that there are plenty of people we could all probably agree, you know, that if I snuck up behind them and put a bullet in their head and they never knew what happened, that they're going to be better off. And that is I'm just saying, it's just a calculatable fact. And so it's kind of silly to have a conversation about how it's wrong. But understand, well, that's in this context of all our human necessity to have these appropriate fences we build and say this is our territory and this is our place and this is our thing we control. And it's this problem is, you know, your rights end where somebody else's rights begin. And obviously that's sort of the conversation. I'm claiming the territory that I own is creation. You're not allowed to make me again. Okay, you're not allowed to put me back in this circumstance based on your optimism. And they're saying that somehow I can't trespass on their right to create living human beings. So I would say if you're going to weigh those two, the one that's more genuine and more real is my defensive rights, and theirs is clearly the aggressive imposing. So the real trespass, I think, if it was really argued out, the real trespassers are the imposers, the first imposer. Because I'm only going to impose out of necessity. I'm not going to impose because I want to. I'm going to impose because they're stepping on my right to sign the contract saying no more, no mas. Don't fuck with this no more. I don't want to show up here again.
Being whose life you're taking. I wouldn't endorse that. That's why I don't endorse extinction, killing extinction. And so...
So you're useless. Yeah, because you have no plan. You have no implementable, rational way to help the future resolve this problem beyond the only hopeful news, which is smart humans don't reproduce. So for humans, it's solvable without any imposing. But you're not going to solve it for animals without imposing our judgment. We're going to actually have to engineer their graceful exit.
I don't think that if you're an antinatalist, you're committed to the view that all means for bringing about...
So he keeps saying all means. This isn't all means. We're not talking about sticking nails in and out of their eye 150 times before we kill them. So it's not all means. It's very specific intentions and under specific guidelines and intention is a good enough word. Thoughtful planning, thoughtful consideration of the options and doing what is the best judgment and doing it even if it's unpleasant.
Prevention of birth are justifiable. That's going to require some additional views.
So he wouldn't kill marzipan.
But he may or may not have.
Yes, I understand. I understand. And you mentioned the killing of pregnant women. I was not suggesting that because we have another stopper in there, and that's their autonomous choice, and you emphasize that on.
So again, autonomous choice to what? To impose on a non-sentient being sentience, to take matter and turn it into a sentience. Somehow she has a license to do that, and the license was signed by what? Oh, insidious, ghoulish nature. Nature who's mass murdered and killed more children than Freddy Krueger. Yeah, they signed the permit. Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
Better never to have been all the time. So there's no question about that. I was talking about non-human, non-autonomous animals in our care.
Non-autonomous. So again, this whole idea that there's some specific thing that gives us this right, and the animals, somehow their emotional feelings don't mean anything. No, the only thing that qualifies us is the fact that we can reason, and our reasoning has to be judged. If the judgment is you believe in a holy ghost, well, you already decided you're an idiot, so you're done. You're done having autonomy because you're a deluded fool. So there's a point where you really have to say they have to, their reasoning skills have to correlate to reality somewhere.
Sorry, let me just clarify, if you don't mind. I agree those two cases are different. I was using it as an extreme case to illustrate.
Right. You're strawmanning. You're bullshitting. You're making up a different circumstance entirely to try to evade the subject. Yeah, and you did.
How, and somebody with an antinatalist end might not always accept antinatalist means. And one reason why they won't hear is because they think that respecting the autonomy of the person who you're considering killing is an important consideration.
So he's just doing it again. He's just re-arguing the point he wasn't making. He's saying, I'm doing this for an animal. You tell me that the animal's better off if I don't do it. That the world is better off, the universe is better off if we let the reproducing organism loose on Mars. Well, fuck you, Benatar. You're an idiot. I mean, he's telling you right there. He knows it's going to happen. He's watching it happen, and he won't stop it. So he I don't know whether he'd intervene if a woman's being chased by a man with a butcher knife. I don't know whether he where would he intervene? Where would he do anything to stop something?
And so just as somebody might bring up that consideration, they might bring up some other kind of consideration with regard to Marzipan. It wouldn't be her autonomy, but it would be, in my view, the fact that she has an interest in continuing to live.
So again, her interest in continuing to live overcomes our interest in preventing billions of new life forms being created. Yeah, that's his logic. Fuck that.
And have we now established that early abortion is an act of antinatalism or not?
Well, my view is it depends on what view you take about when somebody comes into existence in the morally relevant way.
Yeah, obviously, everybody has a different opinion. Maybe he's asking what your fucking goddamn opinion is, idiot. Sorry, but that's just, it's just evading everything. He asked you a simple question. How would you apply your judgment to abortion?
So I don't think that antinatalism per se tells you that early abortion is an antinatalist act.
I don't even know why would we call it an antinatalist act? So even that doesn't make any sense. Is it a harm is the point. And that's the you're perfectly reasonable to recognize a fetus isn't even a guinea pig.
You've got to combine antinatalism with some other view about fetal moral status. And depending on which way you combine it with, you either reach the conclusion that you're preventing a life or ending a life.
Right. So if you're a religious kook, you have a completely different opinion. Yeah, if you're a religious, deluded, silly person, yes, then you'll come to some conclusion that somehow the fetus is being harmed in some way.
And then I return to the point that then a better never to have been is not just a book about antinatalism, it's a book about something else. Because let me quote you on this matter, and it's about the early abortion. Thus, my conclusions should be viewed as recommendations about how a pregnant woman should make use of the freedom to choose whether or not to abort. I am recommending that she does abort and that she needs excellent reason not to. It should be clear that I don't think that there is any such reason. Now, that's a pretty strong statement for early abortion being the killing of the fetus.
Yeah, well, again, all this early abortion crap. The bad thing about late abortions is it's more risk to the mother, frankly.
Fetus or the embryo. And so, I don't know. Maybe I'm confusing things here.
No, I mean, I think that is my conclusion, but it's a conclusion that comes from two earlier conclusions. The one is antinatalism, and then there's the claim about fetuses not having moral standing prior to sentience. So once you put those together, then the conclusion that you've just read out follows. But it doesn't follow just from antinatalism alone.
I don't, what's the point? You're almost arguing the horse before the cart there. You really have to have some understanding of biology and when something is sentient. So if you think carrots are sentient, well, your antinatalism is going to be all kinds of fucked up. Oh, Jesus.
Okay, so of these options, we have now concluded that Better Never to Have Been is a book about antinatalism and some other things.
I think it's fundamentally about antinatalism. It employs some pessimism in the argument, and then it has
So why doesn't he say some realism in the argument, right? So he's basically saying, no, it's a very biased and negatively poised argument, from a completely negative point of view. When it's just about dealing with our reality. The reality is that we do have an optimism bias. We're deluded in our pursuit of our satisfaction and comfort, and we obviously associate demise with destruction and destruction with pain and something unpleasant. And those obvious associations are hard to not emotionally react to. They're an emotional intuition, not a real understanding.
Implications for extinctionism. But again, I don't think it has any implications for the marzipan case. I think other views.
I mean, if I could rub your face in your death, whatever it's going to be, I could just rub your face in it for a while. And then bring you back to here, and then I give you the choice to die early. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you really could understand, what the fuck you're risking and what the fuck is going to be, then maybe you'd be saying right now, go just shoot me now. If my only choice is experiencing that or dying now, I'll still take dying now. And that's just a fact for a lot of people. That's what their life's going to be. It's not going to be they're not going to make the right choice. They're going to linger way too long. And then there's people like me who are just stuck here because, I have to keep arguing. I have to keep fighting because I have to win the war first. I can't die before I win the fucking war. damn it.
Is all relevant there.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thus spoke David Benatar, quite enlightening. I'm sure that our little chat has given our audience some food for thought.
I vomited. Yeah, I threw it up. It was really disgusting shit. Couldn't think about it without just saying, what the fuck? Death is bad? Okay. No. Nonsense. Dying is bad.
I'm thrilled that you could have take the time to...
Well, look, in a lot of cases, dying is bad. Again, I shouldn't just say dying is bad. I mean, there's lots of ways to die where you never knew you did it. That's not bad.
Be here. So thank you very much, David.
And thank you for your interest in all of us. I really appreciate it. Very kind of you. Nice to have a discussion.
Yes, nice to.
Thank you. And that concludes our proceeding.
So it is something to wonder. I wonder if I ever did, you know, have a conversation with Benatar, how it would go. It's just, you know, but yeah, it's just, it's not the book I read. So he doesn't really talk the book he wrote. You know, even though the book was careful, I mean, it really didn't get into the dilemma of advocacy, and the problem of being an antinatalist, you know, not the subject of antinatalism, but being somebody who believes and recognizes the horror and having to accept that pragmatically, you know, there's all of these rules to how you implement this advocacy. And I'd argue that there are some. I mean, obviously, there's no point in doing anything signaling. You know, I've never supported people throwing blood on people's mink coats or any of the act-up kind of... I've never been a big fan of protesting, because you do the arguing first. Okay. And I don't think we've finished the argument. I don't think we've done... I don't think we've... exhausted the role of argument, and so it's not time to start the revolution, but you have to recognize that you may have to someday throw a pineapple at somebody. All right, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. So hopefully the website will be working after I upload this, but you know, whatever, I'll save a copy in case. Yeah, I think that's all. So till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Disappointing, that's all you can say, right?